Have you ever had someone ask for forgiveness, but make no effort to change? That's called cheap grace. And yet, too many of us expect God's forgiveness without any real effort to live a different way. Grace is costly. It cost Jesus his life, and it costs us our lives too. Along the way, you'll be inspired by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the Lutheran pastor who resisted Nazi Germany and lost his life in the process. This four-week series will explore how God's grace enables us to make this costly commitment to live a transformed life.
So Mark, when I was preparing for this message, I got thinking about children's books. I'll get more into why in a little bit, but there are some children's books that they just took on more meaning for me when I was an adult and I began to understand a little bit more of like the backstory. For instance, the book Love You Forever.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's kind of a favorite.
Yeah.
And the backstory of it is really kind of sad. The author wrote it to express his grief after his kid died.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really pretty sad. But also like meaningful. Not all of my favorite books are like that though. Guess How Much I Love You is a favorite one of our family. And just the idea of like the parent and the child going back and forth, Guess How Much I Love You, and it's all the way up to the moon and back. Super sweet. Mark, do you have any books like that that became more meaningful to you when you were an adult?
I do. I want to kind of twist it a little bit. But yeah, there's definitely books that like as you're an adult and you read them to your kids are way more meaningful. One example I have of that is The Complete Tales of Winnie the Pooh. And it's a little bit creepy, the backstory to this. But the backstory is that when Jan and I were first starting to date, we were both into Winnie the Pooh. We both read it as children. And I gave Jana that book when we were like 18, 19 years old and said, someday we will read this together to our kids.
Ooh.
It worked out. So
I don't know, cringy, but cringy for sure.
Yeah. Maybe a little less so because it did actually happen. if it hadn't, that would have been just straight up creepy and weird and cringy. Yeah. But we did. We eventually read that book to our kids together. And that book had so much meaning for us because of the backstory that Jan and I shared regarding that book.
Another book that I come back to frequently, at least mentally, my kids are not asking me to read this anymore, is We're Going on a Bear Hunt.
Oh yeah, I love that
book. We're going on a bear hunt. We're gonna catch a big one. What a beautiful day. We're not scared. And it's like the sing-songy, like,
yes.
It doesn't even really have a good flow, but you can't not say it that way. I don't know.
It's got a rhythm. Anyone who reads it has got to have that rhythm.
And then they get to obstacle after obstacle, and each one they oh, you know, for one, it's there's grass, long wavy grass, and they say you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you have to go through it. And for the grasses, swishy swashy, it was this whole thing. We loved doing that with our kids, but I find myself coming back to this story again and again to think about different things in our lives. We're going to talk about a topic today that you just have to go through it. Like, you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you just have to go through it. But before we get to all of that, let's stop here for a chat question. What's your favorite children's book or story? It could be a book, a story, a song, whatever. Why is that your favorite? Take a minute and talk about it.
Mikkel, we're in the final part today of our series, Costly Grace. It's a series that's been part of our series of series that's based on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, his famous teaching from Matthew 5 through 7. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this, "You can enter God's kingdom only through the narrow gate. The highway to hell is broad, and its gate is wide for the many who choose that way. But the gateway to life is very narrow, and the road is difficult, and only a few ever find it." Finding your way to God's kingdom can be difficult, and it's a narrow and costly way.
Yeah. Throughout this series, we've been using content from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book, The Cost of Discipleship. Today, we're going to be looking at a section in the book called Discipleship and the Cross.
Ooh, sounds fun.
And Bonhoeffer uses a particular story from Mark's account of Jesus' life and ministry. It says this: "Then Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things and be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but 3 days later he would rise from the dead. As he talked about this openly with his disciples, Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things."
It's a really interesting thing. Peter is pulling Jesus aside and reprimanding him. Just before this, Peter had been like, "You're the Messiah, like you are the Christ, you're the one."
Sheesh.
And now he's doing this. Well, Mark continues and says, "Jesus turned around and looked at his disciples, then reprimanded Peter. 'Get away from me, Satan,' he said. 'You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's.'"
So after Jesus says this to his disciples, he then turns and like gathers some more folks around them and says, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it.
And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?"
Whew.
Yeah, this is heavy stuff.
Yikes. Yeah.
And, you know, Jesus is talking about this narrow way, this cost of getting life to the full through Jesus. And, you know, we've been talking throughout this series that God's grace is costly. It's mm-hmm. a costly grace. And it requires some sort of response from us. Typically it requires some sort of sacrifice from us, leaving something behind.
Yeah.
There's a cost associated with following Jesus. And the opposite of costly grace is what Bonhoeffer called cheap grace. And that's expecting forgiveness without real change. We're not really willing to do any changing ourselves. And so today we're going to go deeper on this sort of cost associated mm-hmm. with discipleship of following Jesus. It's a pretty heavy and difficult topic, suffering.
I have a love-hate relationship with this topic because on the one hand, I really do believe that religious leaders like us, we need to talk more about suffering and help people build a theology of suffering because hard times are going to come and we need to like be prepared for that. On the other hand, these kinds of topics are often used to manipulate people who are marginalized into accepting the status quo. Like, just stay in whatever oppressive or abusive situation you're in. You're called to suffer. Just put up with it. So before we dive into the content, I think it's really, really helpful for us to step back and say, what was going on? Why did Bonhoeffer write this? What was his landscape like that he would write something like this?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. And we've kind of given this overview before in other mm-hmm. messages, but it's helpful to start here today.
Yeah.
So Dietrich Bonhoeffer was born in Breslau, Germany in 1906, and he earned his doctorate while in Berlin and then went across the United States and studied at Union Theological Seminary in New York City, where he came into contact with the civil rights movement here in the United States and its resistance to injustice. He went back to Germany, and from 1933 to 1939, he resisted the Nazis by forming a resistance church and forming an underground seminary. And from 1939 to 1943, he worked as a double agent to resist the Nazis and to try to help the Jewish people. In 1943, that led to his arrest. And he was implicated around that time in a failed assassination attempt on Adolf Hitler. It wasn't like he had a gun and was going to actually do that, but he was a plot where they tried to assassinate Hitler. That eventually led to, on April 9, 1945, he was executed. Less than a month later, on May 7, 1945, Germany surrendered.
Wow, less than a month later. Bonhoeffer was living in a time where he was working to resist Nazi Germany, and that ultimately led to his arrest and his execution. And I just think that's like, we're talking about laying down your life and taking up your cross. And that's what he did. And his book, The Cost of Discipleship, was written in 1937. So right in the midst of all of this stuff. And so I have to imagine that he's writing to a group of people trying to figure out what their response is going to be. How do they make sense of the suffering that they're experiencing, and that they're sort of, they're not seeking it out, but like they know that their actions are going to lead to suffering, and they're still choosing those actions because they're the right ones. So he needs a theology of suffering that will sustain him and help him move through his future. Like what was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've never experienced anything like that.
Neither have I.
Obviously. I hope that I don't.
Yeah.
But I have experienced some situations that were difficult and required a lot of me and a lot of my family. So when we moved here to Lansing 2.5 years ago, that required, not only packing up, moving our stuff and then unpacking it, but also leaving a city that we loved, a neighborhood that we loved, a school system that my kids were thriving in, the community that we had. I was leaving a church whose systems I understood and like had become familiar with. And even through all of that, coming to a place, you know, where we have to rebuild all of your friendships. You have to figure out what your new normal is and where to go. And we had to fight might be a little bit of a strong word, but we kind of had to fight for our kids to have the support that they needed in the school system. And that was really hard. But my husband and I, Nathan, we both felt like God was calling us here, was leading us to this space. And it was one of those things where for me anyways, the self-talk was really helpful. Which by that, I mean, do you just say, okay, this is going to be hard and we're going to get through it and it's going to be better on the other side. And we're probably going to be mean to each other a little bit because our patience is thin, but we're going to be lonely for a while, but we're going to make friends. We're going to build relationships. We're going to figure it out. It's tough to do that, but it's also that self-talk and the way that you get through it is important too.
Yeah.
So we have another question for discussion. What kind of perspective do you need on a situation to endure a difficult thing? Take a minute and talk about it. Okay, so we just read that passage. And in that passage in Mark, Jesus is telling his disciples that he's going to suffer. And Peter kind of loses it. He's like, no, you shouldn't say those things. Jesus counters and then gathers a group of people. And he tells them basically, if you want to be my disciple, you have to lay down your life, take up your cross and follow me. And like you said a few minutes ago, this is kind of funny that Peter does this because he's literally just said, you're the Messiah.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. It's fun for me to imagine a little bit what's going through Peter's head. Okay, you're the Messiah and I follow you. And if you're going to suffer, that means I'm going to suffer too. That doesn't seem right. That seems like a scam.
Yeah. And I can totally relate to Peter because his protest demonstrated where he's like, I don't really want to suffer.
I don't either.
I can relate to that. I mean, who wants, right. Who's bring me more suffering. I know I don't want to suffer. But Jesus knew Peter, and Jesus knew that he would suffer and that it was necessary. And Jesus knew about his other disciples too, and he knew that they would suffer too. And Jesus told his followers, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross and follow me. And Jesus makes it clear that taking up your cross is being willing to suffer.
Yeah.
And it's imperative for discipleship. It's imperative for following Jesus that we want to suffer, but we have this willingness to suffer. Bonhoeffer says, just as Christ is Christ only in virtue of his suffering and rejection, so the disciple is a disciple only insofar as they share their Lord's suffering and rejection and crucifixion. Mm. So we're to sort of paraphrase this. Jesus, part of being Messiah is that Jesus was willing to suffer on our behalf. He was willing to experience rejection and ultimately death on the cross. And Jesus was a great teacher. Mm-hmm. Jesus was a great healer. he produced a powerful movement in his followers, but really what made him a Messiah was the fact that he did all those things and he's willing to suffer and die.
Yeah.
Jesus is sort of, you could say, Messiah because of what happened on the cross, because of the suffering that he endured. Now, those other things are really important. Sometimes I think, and maybe Bonhoeffer does this, he brushes over a little bit the importance of Jesus' life and the healing, the ministry and all that, like his, Jesus being a human, period. But Jesus is Messiah, that willingness to suffer is a huge piece of God's redemptive work. Mm-hmm. It's a huge piece of God's rescue mission for humanity. And you know, in a similar way, the disciple, the follower, Jesus is the disciple only insofar as they're also able to suffer and experience rejection and take up their own cross, like Jesus went to the cross.
Yeah, so Jesus is being really clear. Like, this is what it means to follow me. And in the midst of that, I think he gives them like a really beautiful grace at the same time. And that is that he offers them like an off-ramp off the narrow road. Like, it's not a given that they're going to take this step with him, even though they've already, many of them have left their livelihoods and the tools of their livelihoods, like how the fishermen left their boat and their nets. Like, still, there's an off-ramp where he says, if any of you wants to be my follower, this is what you do. There's still an if there.
There is.
Yeah, there's not like, it's not a given that people are going to follow, that not even for the disciples.
Yeah, it's almost like they've come this far, but they're still further, but you don't have to go there if you don't want to. So what is the nature of suffering that is being integral to being a disciple? I think it's a really good question to ask. Like, what is the suffering that we're talking about here? And what does it mean to sort of give up your own way? Or, you know, Jesus says you must give up your own way.
Yeah, I think in our sort of modern understanding of giving up our own way or laying down our life, there's this, it has a really negative connotation, like that it's repressing who you really are, or like putting your real desires and thoughts into a box. It's maybe even self-harm is maybe how we would think about it. But in this context, giving up your own way is really about following really closely to Christ. So it's not the glorification of suffering, even if we're acknowledging that suffering is necessary. We're not seeking out suffering. This is just becoming so aware of God's presence that everything else fades into the background. And it's saying, Christ leads the way, and I'm going to stick close by. We have to be ready and completely focused on Christ to be able to take up this cross. So again, I can imagine like people are hearing this and thinking, well, I've suffered a bunch in my life already. And I know that other people have too. What's, do I get a pass? Do I get a pass? But the thing is that this suffering is not like the everyday human suffering. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about here is the suffering that comes by nature of being a disciple. It's because of our following Jesus. It's for the sake of Christ. And so then we ask like, all right, well, how do we know what the suffering is? Do we have to go find it?
No, we don't.
No, the answer is no.
And, you know, this is where Bonhoeffer points us back again and again to the cross.
Right.
He says, notice how Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. And it's right there, right? You don't have to go out looking. You don't have to go searching for suffering. Just take up your cross. And I really want to emphasize that your cross, because the first suffering that all of us face is this call to follow Jesus. Right. And there's some abandoning we have to do of attachments and things that were important to us. And if we follow Jesus, they're going to become less important. And you know, we go back to the disciples and remember how like they left vocations, they left their nets behind in order to follow Jesus. You think of the rich young man who was called to leave behind his riches and was like, nope, can't do it. When we respond to this call to discipleship, our invitation comes with a cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past couple of weeks, you and I have explored the cost of becoming pastors.
Right.
What we left behind when we said yes to this call to God to become a pastor. And there's definitely a cost
yeah.
that's associated with it. It's hard to separate costs from suffering. They're really sort of intertwined together. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not going to rehash those costs again, but there are costs too with just following Jesus in general that I think yeah. we can all relate to, whether we are a pastor or just a follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget when Jan and I first started attending Sycamore Creek. You know, we were adults. We had a newborn baby, Drew, in our family. And as we connected with this church family, we recognized like God's really calling us to be generous, mm-hmm. including with our resources. And we wanted to give to Sycamore Creek. And it was really hard with yeah. a new baby and a new family, and like our future was uncertain. There was a cost to taking some money and giving that money to support Sycamore Creek. Now, it's been wonderful. God has really blessed us, and our resources have grown, and now we're able to give more to Sycamore Creek than we were mm-hmm. then, thank God. But at the same time, there's still a cost to it. You know, yeah. Jan and I can very easily look at people who make similar incomes to us, and our vacations maybe aren't as nice as some other people's, and our house isn't as nice, or our car isn't as new, or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. There's been a cost right. to following Jesus and doing that with our finances. How about for you, Mikkel? What's another way that you've sort of experienced cost?
I think very similarly to you, but kind of different. When Nathan and I were first married, he felt called to go on staff with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. So not to be a pastor, but to do ministry. And before that, he had been working at a landscaping company. And the intern salary for InterVarsity staff is like nothing. He took a 50% pay cut. And so we moved out of like a two-bedroom apartment into like a studio apartment that was like tiny. I've got stories about that apartment. Yeah. And for like 10 years, he was on staff with InterVarsity. And like you were just describing, like it affected our vacations. It affected the place that we were living. It affected the cars that we drove. I mean, it affected everything. It affected what jobs I could have and my career options. It was a lot. For him to accept that call to be in ministry for that time. Turning back to Bonhoeffer, I have to imagine he didn't know what was coming.
No.
He didn't know what was in his future. He didn't know what cross would be his to take up. But it was like he was already practicing for that future, yes. Like the steps that he was taking now and this theology that he was developing, that laid the groundwork for him to be able to say yes in the future. To that cross. He says the cross is not the terrible end to an otherwise God-fearing and happy life, but it meets us in the beginning of our communion with Christ. So when Christ calls us, he bids us to come and die. But again, it's not like we're not going to go looking for suffering. We're not engaging in self-harm or like seeking out martyrdom on purpose. He says this death, it might be like that of the first disciples, who had to leave home and work to follow him, or it may be a death like Luther's, who had to leave the monastery and go out into the world. I would add, it might be like Bonhoeffer's, who resisted the Nazis in Germany.
It could be.
But it's the same death every time. Death in Jesus Christ, the death of the old self at their call.
We've been talking throughout this series about how we're seeking costly grace. Mm-hmm. And it's a grace that is costly because if we're going to take up our cross, like, there's going to be a cost, like it costs our life. And it's grace because it gives us true life, life to the full, the really real. And Bonhoeffer says this again another way. Jesus Christ and his call are necessarily our death as well as our life. Mm-hmm. The call to discipleship, the baptism in the name of Jesus Christ, means both death and life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important here to draw some distinctions between the suffering of Jesus in the suffering of Jesus' followers, his
right.
disciples. So Jesus' suffering and our suffering, they're similar, but they're also distinct and different. So Jesus' death and resurrection was an incredible thing because it has the power of atonement.
Right.
And that is, you know, we talk about these words all the time at Sycamore Creek. It brings us freedom. It brings us forgiveness. It brings us healing. That's the sort of atoning work of Jesus and the suffering that he went through. And because of the nature of Jesus and Jesus' suffering, whenever Jesus' disciples suffer, and that's including us, Jesus shares in that suffering. And that's a huge encouragement to us because Jesus' disciples are never alone in their suffering. Now, the disciples, they're all went through some suffering and they also share in the suffering of others, like Jesus' death, but it's also unlike Jesus' death in that there's no atoning power in us as followers of Jesus when we suffer. We don't achieve forgiveness and healing and liberation for others through our suffering. And yet there's something really powerful about suffering and sharing to suffering with others. Like when we follow Jesus together and we share in suffering together, yes, Jesus is present in that. And there's a redemptive power through Jesus' suffering, but also the church, we recognize that the world still needs people to suffer with each other. It's a powerful thing when we do that for each other. And so as we follow Christ, suffering becomes the church's thing, the follower of Christ's thing to take on as well. And it's part of our union with Christ and suffering. I've been reflecting on this and just the power of people going through suffering with each other.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, I'm in this season right now where my daughter Kate just had surgery.
Yeah.
And it has been gut-wrenching as a parent to see my child have a major surgery and to be in pain and to be suffering. And yet at the same time, it has been so amazing to be a part of Sycamore Creek in the midst of this, in the community that we have around us. Now, I've entered into suffering with so many people as a pastor and as a volunteer and as a part of Sycamore Creek, and to be on the side of it where my family is going through a difficult season and people are caring and being present for us, it's incredibly powerful. It's a different experience of suffering when it's with other people. Here's our last question for discussion. Talk about how it changes our experience of suffering when we have the support of others bearing it with us. Let's talk about that.
Mark, remember our story? We're going on a bear hunt.
I do.
Yeah, we're going on a bear hunt. We're going to catch the whole thing. Sometimes the only thing to do for suffering is to endure it.
It is. Bonhoeffer reflects on Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane before his crucifixion, and he prays for the cup of suffering to pass by. And he says, if possible, God, let this cup pass me by. It reminds us not even Jesus was eager to endure suffering, which is super encouraging to me. Bonhoeffer says, for the cup of suffering will indeed pass from him, that's from Jesus, but only by his drinking it. Bonhoeffer poetically says, suffering is overcome by suffering.
Yeah. The suffering will be over eventually, but you just have to get through it.
You have to get through it.
You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You just have to go
through it.
Through it. And even with all of this framework, still sometimes it's hard for me to wrap my head and my heart around a message like this. It's hard to internalize it and accept it. And I think that's okay. I don't think that we are meant to want to suffer or to seek it out. But I think there are two things that help me internalize this message or a little bit more. And the first is something that we already mentioned, and that is that Bonhoeffer is writing, preparing to risk his life and then give it to resist Nazi Germany.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. And I think that most of us would look at that sacrifice and see something worthwhile in it, see something aspirational, like that's the kind of person I want to be who can make a choice like that. And this is how he got to that place where he was willing to give his life to end the evil of Nazi Germany. And so I think maybe this is a message that we need too. We need an invitation to begin practicing our discipleship in this way. And the second thing is maybe a quirk of my own brain, that when I hear a message on living a life of sacrifice or surrendering to death, whatever it is, like a caution flag goes up. I already mentioned this. I get a little bit like, oh, you know, is this an invitation to accept the status quo? And obviously that's not what Bonhoeffer did.
No.
Completely the opposite.
It's the opposite, yeah.
But essentially, like, another way that we're talking about, that we could talk about this that helps me, is to talk about cruciformity, like being cruciform, which is the shape of the cross. And for some reason, that's more compelling to me. It's a little bit easier for me to wrap my head around. Cruciformity is living a life in the shape of, and that is shaped by, the cross. Maybe I think there's something about connecting it so intimately to Jesus and the choices that Jesus made that shifts something in me. Like in that verse, the last part of it is follow me. And I think that's really what we're getting at here. I'm reminded of the agency that Jesus had to choose this path and love people in this way. And so when the body of Christ, the church, lives cruciform lives, when we act in this way, it changes the world around us. It changes us, and it changes the world around us. And it's a beautiful thing.
It is.